are back with episode 827 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Okay, and enough with the little idle chit-chat. Let's get into some meat of this episode.
Really? We're actually going to do a little bit of idle chit-chat, so too bad.
Well, I could do shows nonstop, but yes, okay.
Yes. It's been 3 weeks, people, and we are still catching up with a few things, including, what we have to look forward to this fall.
Just as a side note to follow up on our Discovery stuff,
yes.
I've heard even more news since our last show, so I'll share another tidbit when you're ready.
Yeah, yes. For listeners was a couple days ago, for us was like 10 minutes, but go ahead.
Jonathan Frakes has dropped the bomb that they're going to be doing a Mirror Mirror episode on Discovery.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
I'm not sure how that's supposed to work, but okay.
I don't know either, but it's sounds very interesting.
Hmm.
Since technically the last time we've seen the Mirror Universe would have been during the Enterprise episodes that they did, and so we now have that gap between the Enterprise episode and the original Mirror Mirror episode, so there's a good 100 years to fill, so that'll be interesting.
That is true. All right, well, before we get into the fall schedule, which is oddly grouped with a lot of shows that we didn't think that we'd be paying as much attention to, at least but that may be all we have. Let's talk about some other news that's out there or other things that are worth talking about. The first thing that I want to kind of get your opinion on here, Gary, and I feel like this is going to be slightly controversial, is that there's been a shakeup with the direction of Episode 9 for Star Wars. The old director is out.
And the older director is it.
And they are bringing in J.J. Abrams, he who may be beloved or hated, depending on who you talk to both write and direct Episode 9. I can hear the joy in your response already, Gary.
Well, I'll be the first one to admit that I uttered a profanity when I heard that. It's not that I don't feel the man is talented. I think when he is involved in something that he's passionate about, he does a very good job. And when he's not, it shows violently. That being said, I think he has some care for the Star Wars universe. I just don't know. I'm concerned with I don't want to say copying. That's not quite the right word, but almost like using outlines from previous movies to really shape shape the progression of his the movie that he's doing at the time. And I felt we saw a lot of that in the first movie, and when we didn't see it in this second, I felt a little bit better.
J.J. Abrams does play a lot on the nostalgic factor. I'm not going to lie about that. Even things like Alias, some of his better work, plays a lot with touchstones of his childhood. It's very clear that he's doing his version of the familiar. And I think that that's what he has become known for, is that he takes things that he loved or that he has elements of things that he loves and so on, and he kind of does his modern version of it. And what it winds up being is, in the eyes of some, less homage and more blatant ripoff. Certainly those Trek fans that feel like he was not very invested in the Trek history would agree with me on that. That said, he has always said that he likes Star Wars more than Star Trek. I feel like he only went the route of ultra-nostalgic mirroring what has gone before because he knew the first movie out would be best received if it were very familiar. Plus, it was his chance to kind of show this is what that would look like today. I don't think that he would go the route of making the mistake of doing it again. I think hopefully he's heard enough criticism of The Force Awakens to realize how badly received that would be. Is that a slam dunk that he would? No. But I give him the benefit of the doubt. Until we start hearing things that make me worry. That said, even if we were to mirror a lot of things that happened in, say, Return of the Jedi, quite frankly, Return of the Jedi wasn't nearly as solid a movie as Star Wars or certainly Empire, so...
Well, hey. Kirshner didn't think so.
Yeah. There's room for improvement there, right? So why not? quite honestly, I'm less concerned that he's going to ape Return of the Jedi or yet again do the familiar. How many of the novels of the original Expanded Universe were basically just retelling the same story again? And some of those were extremely successful despite that. Quite frankly, I'm less worried about that. I'd be far more worried if The Last Jedi turns out to be too familiar compared to Empire. That would be the one that would worry me. Because if that happens, oh boy, there is a creative problem with these with this new trilogy. I don't mind them retelling the story, kind of. It emphasizes the fact that, man, you thought things would change. They didn't change in 30 years. They're still dealing with the same stuff. That's fine as a starting point, but they can't keep retelling the same story over and over again. Rogue One gave us a lot of hope. They've got to capitalize on that. And I hope that that's what happens with Last Jedi. But yeah, if Last Jedi turns out to just be Empire with the serial numbers filed off, Episode 9 is going to be very problematic for me after that. What about you? You agree, disagree with that?
I voice I still have the concerns that you do, and I'm not quite as optimistic as you are. But at the same time, if nothing else, Rogue One has shown us that the world, this universe that Luke has created, is so broad. You don't need to go down the same path to still be sort of linked in to the core narrative or to what drew people to it in the first place. So I just hope he sees that, and rather than rehashes the characters, you know, we have characters, at least at this point, that have barely been touched as I think about them. I think there's still so much more to see, Rey and, Finn and even Kylo, that there's still blank slates that need to be filled. And if they're basically just laid over existing characters, that's a loss for everybody, not just for us as viewers, but even as a writer to have that opportunity to fill it in with new ideas. So I hope he realizes that.
I hope so too. I really do. And quite frankly, I mean, I'm, despite my criticisms of things over the years, of course, I think that I do tend to be more hopeful. I try to see the good and the enjoyable and everything. I mean, I unabashedly say there are parts of Star Trek V that I enjoy immensely. And that's boy, if you want a position that puts you on an island by yourself often, that would be the one.
I agree. It's underrated. Yes.
Yeah. But that said, I mean, I cannot deny that for all the things that I enjoy about Into Darkness, that there are some massive problems with that movie. I think that they actually start to be even more apparent the more you watch them, which is never a good sign. And I would like to see more of the creativity, the evolution. We've seen it in some of the novels over the years. We've seen it in things like Rogue One. Let's see it again. That's what I'm hoping for. And I'll continue to be optimistic until I see evidence to the contrary. Let's see. Beyond that, Gary, what have you been up to that was not con-related over the last couple weeks?
Oh, I got to live through a hurricane. Enjoyable thing. I learned to, it's like a con. Everybody's sort of forced to deal with something. All the houses dress up, unfortunately, in just boards. So very similar. Not much uniqueness, and you snack a lot.
Yeah.
So
which came through it okay though. It seemed like it veered to the west a little bit unexpectedly, which was good for you guys.
Yes, it was still significant. I wouldn't call complete losses, but people have been without power for a week. Trees, hitting into roofs, destroying cars, a whole bunch of other things. And I wouldn't say we're just about a week past it, and things are still very disrupted. So that, and with possibly two more on the way. Just in case your nerves wanted to calm down, and then you look and you see developing storms, and your stomach knots up again and says, maybe I shouldn't throw the boards out for the windows just yet. But in the meantime, I did manage to have some geek fun post-con. One, I've been reading 3001, A Space Odyssey.
I read it a long time ago, so I understand that sound myself.
I've read just about all the other ones, and they get progressively more difficult to read as you go forward. At the same time, I've always been a fan of, I'll say, 50s Pulp Fiction, Foundation series I love dearly. And in some ways, I'm about halfway through. It's still coming across as a very light sort of science fiction hokey fare. I had to explain to my son, I would call it light hard science fiction. And hard science fiction, very sort of science issue, science gadgets type of things. But yet at the same time, it is not a really a deep story, at least to me. And so I'm somewhat enjoying that, but I'm not quite through yet, about halfway through. But it's, like I said, it's light fare, and that's sort of what I need right now. Things are still kind of hectic so around here. So the light escapism is nice. I'm not ready to chew into a novel at this moment. So that being said, we also went out and I got to see Dark Tower finally. Thankfully, okay. It was still in the movie theaters. And I have to say, I enjoyed the movie a great deal. I think they marketed it horribly. I really think the audience that would need to see it was not the audience that it was advertised to. It was a much lighter fare than any of the advertisements or promos ever sort of implied. I think if they had marketed this as almost as a teenager or young adult type of movie, that it probably would have done much better. And the content was easily at PG-13 was easily within that realm.
Huh.
I went with three preteens actually, and they all felt remarkably moved and liked the movie a lot.
That's really odd. Only because, yeah, it just does not feel like that's where they're going with things at all. So it really didn't seem that way.
Yeah, we were usually somewhat strict with the kids. So when we were going to, I was like, Stephen King movie? I was like, what is this rated? And it was PG-13. I said, really? Okay. I mean, I've read the source material a long time ago. But I was like, oh, all right. And it was pulled off really well at that age level type of thing, Idris Elba did, as far as I'm concerned, a very good job, much better than he did in the last Star Trek movie. Huh. The character was much more three-dimensional, even though he probably didn't even have as many lines as the character from Star Trek did. So I liked it a lot. Matthew McConaughey was really good in it. He played the typical mystery villain type of guy.
He was the Man in Black, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. And he did an excellent job in that. Overall, I just thought it was well done. It timed, it paced well. I never even bothered to check my watch, which is usually the, is this over yet? But I didn't even need to do that. I was really sort of enamored by it the whole way. Like I said, I think they marketed it wrong. If people were expecting a Christine, a Carrie, because of the associated, author, they shouldn't have. It was much calmer, nicer than that. Like I said, if they only marketed it differently, I think it would have done a lot better. I would not call this a deep, dark adult movie by any means. It's much, as I said, it's when I say young adult, I don't want it to seem like it's all just like gumdrops and candy. It is darker than that, but at the same time, it is, I'll call it, what would be a nice way to put it? It's a dark, stormy evening and not not Twilight with the culling starting. It's dark enough. It's as dark as it needs to be without having to go to darkness for it just its own sake, which sometimes movies do.
Now, how do you feel it did as a, shall we say, kind of representation of the source material?
I think it covered it, and obviously, like with any movie, it could not go into some of the depths that it needed to. Plus, being given the number of novels in that series, there's no way one movie could ever cover all of it. But I thought that it was I thought they did a reasonable glance over of all the material. I wouldn't say they left anything significant out or that couldn't be lived without out of it. But at the same time, a very shallow covering of the source material.
Yeah, because of course this was meant to kick off a multimedia franchise. Future films, a television series, all in universe. Very ambitious. It was years in the making and planning, and then this came out and it felt like it hit with a thud.
Yes.
Do you feel like it's going to have any chance of future, shall we say?
Well, the box office was not good, so I would find it very hard. But at the same time, I don't see why it couldn't be. It really was a solid movie. Many other movies doing far less work would get another another sequel for it. So I really hope it does. Like I said, Elba was fantastic in it. McConaughey was very good in it. I would love to see it again.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, I'll be honest with you. That actually goes a long way to making me actually want to see the movie.
Well, and I'm saying, even if you don't, might not care to necessarily see it in the theater, definitely, you know, it will, you know, be on cable and other outlets. Definitely, it's definitely worth a watch. I don't know that it's, again, it's not a movie that I think has to be seen on a large screen. A lot of it's character and character pieces, and it'll work well on the small screen too. So, don't miss it when you get the opportunity to see it.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Let's see. Anything else that you've been up to?
No, that's about it for the time being. I'm planning out costumes for both Halloween and possibly Dragon Con next year, but that's about it at the moment that I can think of. Yes.
Okay. Very good.
And what geeky stuff have you been? Books, video games. It's hard to keep up with you sometimes.
Yes, a little bit of everything. Mainly reading. I'll be honest. There was a little while there where I was really finding it hard to. I don't know if I would call it the attention span, but maybe just as you said, the anxiety levels weren't there for me to really dig into novels. But lately, over the summer, I've really been able to get a lot of my stack taken care of, I guess you could say. So I've read the third book in the Prey trilogy for Star Trek, called Hall of Heroes. I thought that was a really enjoyable read. John Jackson Miller was the author for all three books, and I think that he delivered a really nice trilogy that had a lot to do with the Klingon. So if you are a Klingon fan, you're going to like those books. I also read Edmund Would Be Proud. I actually read the second book in the Culture series by Ian Banks. It's A Player of Games, and it's a very readable book. What's the word that I'm looking for? The word's on the tip of my tongue and I can't remember it. I want to say approachable, but that's not the word that I'm looking for. But at any rate, you can really, I think that it's good one to just kind of pick up as a hard science fiction book. There's a lot of nice details and world building in there. If you're not familiar with the culture, what you could kind of say is that it is a, it digs deep into what kind of world the Federation often claims to be, which is almost like a very, I guess you could say, utopian type of society.
Yes.
Like moneyless. The one big difference would be that genetic engineering and so forth is actually encouraged. They are effectively a merged... They're basically like a very pro-Federation version of the Borg, if you really want to get down to it. Cybernetics and so forth, machines, working with humans and various alien cultures. And what this book is very much about is essentially that culture interacting with what you might say is almost a... almost like if they ran into certain parts of the Middle East, if you were. A lot of the ugly side of... a somewhat rapacious capitalist system, if you were. It's not quite as simplistic as that. And one of the things that I like about it is that while it's kind of trying to get into what it would really mean for you to have a Federation that has the ideals that they spout off a lot in Star Trek, especially the Next Generation, is that there is, of course, a dark side to that. And it kind of digs into some of the aspects that a prime directive would almost... beg you to think about, which is, how far do they say they don't interfere with other cultures, but really they do? And, of course the Federation would have an organization like Section 31. And they would probably work really hand-in-hand with the diplomatic corps, far more than you think they would. And it kind of gets into those kinds of ideas, and I really appreciated that, especially as it comes from the point of view of someone who is in the culture and thinks of the culture as being the epitome of a utopian society. And, the main character slowly learns that there's more to his world than he believes. And it's very interesting, and it was a very quick read, but it was a very... solid and an engaging read. I wish I could say the same for the next book that I read. It was The First Confessor, which is kind of the ultimate prequel to the Sword of Truth books by Terry Goodkind.
Oh, yeah.
I find Terry Goodkind that he has really nice ideas. Unfortunately, he reminds me almost sometimes of the authors of the Dune prequels. I know, that is like a really bad hit for some people to hear. But bear with me here. His writing is incredibly repetitive. It's almost like he doesn't trust the reader to get his point the first time. So he has the characters repeat themselves endlessly, sometimes in the same paragraph. Which gets very irritating to me. You know, trust me as a reader to actually follow what's going on. The other thing is that he likes to write extremely long books. This was a short book for him at 600 plus pages. And I really feel like he's the type of author, especially something like this, where he could tell twice as good a story in half the pages. He doesn't need to go on. He's very long-winded. And it was kind of the problem I had with Wizard's First Rule, which is the first sort of truth book, in that I really liked what the story was doing, but man, did he just need to get to the point. It is just like, wow, you are taking so long to get... And it's some of these fantasy series, I mean, the Wheel of Time books, were the same problem with Richard Jordan, or Robert Jordan after a while, is that it's like, man, you don't need to have a 1,000-page book where you're just going across this town. just get there. You know, George R. R. Martin has the same problem where it's like, you can skip some things. You don't have to say what people had for breakfast every day throughout your saga. And here it's just like, let me tell you 7 different ways the exact same relatively mundane piece of information that you probably already figured out 200 pages ago. It was good enough for me to keep going. I didn't put the book aside, which I've done with some of these bigger books, or these larger fantasy series where I just can't get into the writing style. But this is not a series that I can just mainline, because after one or two of these, I would start beating my head against the wall. I have to kind of space them out. It's a series that I really want to get into. I hear that some of the later books are really good and really, really go into some interesting places. But man, it's just tough, his writing style. I almost want to say the same thing about the Dark Tower series, since we mentioned that earlier. I haven't read all the books because Stephen King's writing style drives me insane.
Yes, and now it does, yeah.
So, you know, there's only so many incomplete sentences that I can read before I start wanting to throw the book around. But yeah, it was a bit of a tough go. Considering it was 600 pages, I probably read it much faster than my analysis of it would imply. But yeah, I can skim those books and still get the point and get a lot of the plot points. I also know there are some people who are going to say you really shouldn't have read that book until when it was... You should read the books in published order, not in chronological order, for various reasons, but my brain won't let me do that. I want the story in the timeline within the universe. I'm doing the same thing with the Terry Brooks books. I want to see how all the details kind of fit together. I don't mind being spoiled for future books. It's not like, you know, a TV series where, oh, you watched this movie, now you're, you know, it's not like watching In the Beginning and then watching Babylon 5. It's not the same thing, as far as I can tell. But yeah, just anyone who's out there who's curious, this is not an author that is like, just keeps the story moving. It is a bit of a slog, at least as far as I can tell. Finally, I read, I actually technically have like 15 pages left, but okay. Star Wars, the third Aftermath book, Empire's End, which I believe you've read, Garrett.
Yes, I did.
I have to say, I was really critical of Chuck Wendig and Aftermath, the first book.
Yes.
Very critical. I found that each volume in that trilogy got progressively much better. And Empire's End actually was a really readable book. I ripped through that book pretty quick. Maybe it was because I understood the characters or knew the characters better. Maybe because it actually started telling story points that I cared about. But I did not have nearly as much problem with this book as I did with Aftermath. Aftermath, I was sitting there like, why am I reading this? But this was a much better book. I don't know. I know you were kind of also, when you read this one, you were kind of burnt out on the novels, but...
I guess I felt he was just getting – I was getting used to his writing style a little bit more by book 3.
Maybe that was it too, because I also recently read Life Debt. It was only maybe a matter of a month or two between them. But I didn't trip over his writing style nearly as much this time as I did with Aftermath. With Aftermath, it was like getting hit in the face.
Yeah. No, it was and I've read some of his stuff before, so it sort of surprised me that it felt so different when he was writing for this, but who knows what editors or stuff might have been involved. So I can't say, but yeah, but the third book definitely did pick up, and that I guess we were curious to see how the narrative ended at that point. If you made it to book three, then you've lived through one and two, and you I think you do develop some affinity for the characters regardless of how much you enjoy them or don't enjoy them, so you wanted to see the storyline end.
Yeah, that might have been part of it too. Yeah, other than that, I've also been watching some other TV. I watched at least half of The Tick on Amazon. I am fairly pleased with it. Have you watched any of that?
No, I almost caught it one day, but something happened I wasn't able to. So,
how about The Orville? Did you watch the first episode?
I've watched the first episode of Orville. I think they need to. Geez, I hate to say it, and I know that's why actually some people want to watch it, but they need to tone down a little bit. Seth needs to tone down just a little bit. Almost everything else works very well, I think.
I think that it's a really good Star Trek show.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think he's just some of his off-the-cuff things are just a little too far. But that being said, the whole rest of the show holds up very well. And I read a quote about it today, and I think it made a lot of sense. It's what Star Trek would be if regular people like us were in it, not like those perfect people from Next Generation.
Yeah, I definitely get that. And also, I understand I understand what you're saying, because I actually feel a lot the same way. It's so much like a really good Star Trek show that the irreverent humor, I almost feel like it's unnecessary. I want to see the straight up Star Trek show.
Well, yes, but a lot of people do want the humor, and I don't have a problem with that. And for almost every other character, I think they achieve a happy medium. I think Seth himself goes just a little bit over the top, and that's what he's known for. So yeah, it wasn't unexpected or anything like that. I'm like not shocked or anything, but at the same time, it jars you out.
That's exactly the way that I would describe it. Is that it is? I'm kind of repeating myself here, but essentially, what it is for me is that it's such a good representation of a Star Trek like show that those moments completely jar me out of it. I'm like, whoa, wait, that's not what I expected. Not necessarily in a bad way, but the humor doesn't flow from the situation as organically as it could as it does in other situations.
Yeah. Now, when I watch like Adria Palicki make comments, or I don't remember who the new pilot is, but you know, even he's a little over the top. But you know, you could treat him as a quirky character. But for the main character to be doing the identical thing, it falls like you said, it pulls you out just a little too much. By no means do I want him to be a stoic type of figure, but at the same time, you know, when he's talking to like the head of an alien and starts talking about his divorce, that's a little too far. Yeah, that's a little bit much. To make a comment, you know, with your fellow officers or something like that, that's a whole nother ball of wax. But yeah, it's just like I said, it's just a little too far over the top. I think if they pulled it back, if Seth pulled it back a hair, everything else pretty much balances evenly, and we could have a very good they don't want to say Star Trek, so I will say science fiction series. And I don't, you know, Star Trek by no means was the first of its type to be quasi-military, exploring space and anything like that. Just because they became the most popular version of that genre does not mean that they have to be or need to be the only version of that. You know, as we talk obsessively sometimes about, you know, Babylon 5, Space Above and Beyond, even, you know, Starship Troopers, you know, there's several different models you could go with that are, you know, that have been very effective and loved by fans that don't necessarily have to be Star Trek, even though you would say they sprung from the same seed.
Now that actually brings us to an interesting final point for this episode, and that is the fall season. I don't even feel like we need to go in extreme detail here, because I'm just going to read out the ones that kind of jump out to me on each night, and you're going to see a theme. Okay? Monday nights, the new show is The Gifted, which is the X-Men show. The other one that jumps out is the third season of Supergirl.
Please be Legion.
Okay, so now I go through the rest of the night, and I'm just kind of not seeing a whole lot here, so let's go ahead and move on to Tuesday nights. Okay, Tuesday nights, we see The Flash, Season 4. we see season 3 of Legends of Tomorrow. Now I'm going to scroll. I'm scrolling. Not seeing a whole lot. And I'm still scrolling. So, oh, wait, here is Wednesday.
Yes.
And I see Designated Survivor is coming back, although that's being retooled, from what I understand, into a little bit of a less conspiratorial show. Okay, second season of Riverdale. Okay. Are we seeing the pattern here? Because, yeah. Vikings, of course, is coming back, as we said. Yep. Yep. Oh, look, Thursday. Okay, so Thursday we've got The Orville, as we just talked about, Supernatural Season 13, Season 6 of Arrow.
And now did you forget Gotham?
No, I didn't.
Yes,
forget
you did.
It. No. Apparently, no, I didn't forget it because you didn't forget it.
Oh, okay.
You can take that one for the team. Is Barbara the Harley Quinn of the show yet?
I think they've been trying to resist it. Mm.
Yeah, despite the fact they kind of made her that.
Yep.
For those who are interested, Van Helsing Season 2, although that's kind of fallen off my list. Okay, Fridays. Once Upon a Time Season 7, but that's the reboot, so I don't even
know. Oh, yeah, that's... That.
The Inhumans, which is a new show.
Now, John, just for a second quick, you know, we talk about Star Trek not wanting to do previews, but then look at the Inhumans. They did previews and they got raked across the coals before, honestly, the average person has ever had a chance to even watch it. And how does that shape your opinion?
It's being called a flop when it was an edited version of the first two episodes that went to IMAX. So you basically, it wasn't completely in IMAX. It was certain scenes were in IMAX. So you took IMAX level resolution screens.
Yes.
And you mixed it with, at best, 1080p.
Mm-hmm.
And then people were wondering why it looked so bad.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I hear that the writing is horrendous, but this is also the same showrunner that did Iron Fist. Were we expecting miracles?
Sorry.
Yeah,
I did the Iron Fist panel as well. That was
yes. I enjoyed parts of Iron Fist. I expect to enjoy certain parts of Inhumans. I look for the positive where I can, but I also acknowledge this guy does not have a great track record. But we also have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 5. We have, The Exorcist Season 2. That's one I'm actually looking forward to. That was kind of a surprise thing to come back. But I'm once again flipping here. You know, those who are interested, you have Z Nation Season 4. I don't recall seeing this before. Superstition is a new show on Sci-Fi. What is that? That doesn't really ring a bell. Okay, so haunted houses, graveyards, so on and so forth. Yeah, not really doing much for me there.
Yeah, I can tell you're into it, yeah.
Yeah. Saturday nights, do we have anything here?
No. Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency returns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's not.
I was on the fence of that one, so yeah.
Slow night, it's not bad. Yeah.
Another slow night, yeah. Sundays. Okay, Sundays we have...
Last Man on Earth, Season 4.
Last Man on Earth, okay. Comedy, that's good. Not seen.
We have our Fear and non-flavored Walking Dead.
Yes, that's true. We'll be talking a little bit about that next time. Some people would probably be interested in the second season of Berlin Station or the Get Shorty adaptation.
I'm looking forward to that, actually. But
there you go.
I realize it's a little out of our
genre. It's also on Epix, so not a whole lot of people necessarily get that channel. Yeah, I think I'm. Oh, Outlander season 3 for those.
Oh, my wife is quite the fan of that. Yes,
same here. Certain parts of it, anyway. So yes, I think that there's a theme that is emerging here, and that is that when we talked about we're going to focus on some of the other shows out there, other than the DCW, it's literally like half the shows that are genre related right now. There's a lot of shows throughout the year, and what I'm really shocked by is how many of them are being held for the winter or the spring. Because we're going to get hit like a hammer with all the shows coming back after like October, or January or beyond. I know that Mr. Robot's on here somewhere, but I can't for the life of me find it. because I know that's coming back sometime this fall. But really, this is not a huge list.
No, but at the same time, you know, we've talked about this for years, and it's we're already there now. You know, there is no summer anymore. There, you know, especially with online viewing and people being able to watch whatever they want, whenever they want. You know, our seasons are fading away. There's no real need for, you know, for these targeted session, you know, these targeted months, and because there's no need to have to count anymore, because you know Comcast or whoever your provider is getting all your viewing data from your box at home. They're getting all the requests for watching videos through the phone. So ratings are now very accurate and computerized, and they don't need to you know, have some of the old tallying tricks that they used to have to depend on. And that's what gave us our seasons. And now we don't need them anymore. So they're going to start doing stuff that's more convenient for them. They know people are going to have more free time during the summer, and they're going to start showing you more TV.
Yeah, I think that it's just interesting that we have this explosion of genre TV, and yet we are basically getting a slog of superhero shows all at the same time here in the fall. Not necessarily a bad thing. Let's look at the silver lining. What that means, of course, is that if these shows turn out to not be worthy of attention, that just means it's more time for us to devote to other things. We do know that there are other shows like Stranger Things, Season 2 coming along in the fall. There was another one that was coming along. I don't have the magazine in front of me that actually listed them, but we do have other things that are coming. So certainly I think that it's an opportunity for us to focus on other things rather than try to necessarily dig into it. We can pretty much handle things like we did here in the summer, which is there may be a few more titles per week, but at the same time, do we have to talk about every show every week? Probably not. We can kind of space it out a little bit. So it gives us an opportunity to shake things up on our own end, shake things up for you guys, and maybe watch some more movies. Who knows? Do things a little bit differently, as it were.
Absolutely.
Which is all for the good for us, because it keeps us fairly well engaged. Any last thoughts or any further thoughts on what we see here in the fall? I mean, like I said, I was just a little bit surprised that it was a very familiar batch.
Well, you know, one thing, you know, you went through shows that, you know, that typically we are interested in or we review or talk about. But as you were going through there, I did notice actually what I would call to be a dearth of new shows. They weren't slammed. None of the channels were really slam packed with new material. Not to say it wasn't there. It just didn't feel overwhelming the way it sometimes does in a season. So it looks like there's, you know, a lot of renewals and a lot of sort of, you know, not taking chances. And I do notice we used to talk about how heavy actually sort of the science fiction comic book fantasy genre was, and it looks like it's retreated a bit this year.
Or as I said, it almost feels like they are spreading it out. Because we know that, you know, Black Lightning is going to come along at some point. We know that there are some other shows that like Legion is going to come back and so on. So we do know that they're out there. They're just not in the fall. But we'll see. We'll see. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap this episode up here. When we come back next time, we're going to get into episodic discussion, and that's going to include some discussion about the season finale of Game of Thrones. So stay tuned until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.